Hey, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists.
And we are artists this week.
We're artists this week. We're okay. Snooty, uppity artists this week. Hey, we're sponsored by Fire Poppy's Needlework Boutique.
Awesome.
Pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. Yep. So Fire Poppy's, this past Sunday, we did a show. I did a show. Susan Winter, owner of Fire Poppy's. What a great conversation we had. So if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to that. Great conversation about getting the shop started and how it came to be and why it's called Fire Poppy's and what she's doing with the shop, the activities, and so on and so forth. Really enjoyed talking to her. She's quite a lady. So check that out. And then obviously check out firepoppies.com and we appreciate the support. Now here's the deal. This is the deal here. I have to say I might be taking advantage of this. She has right now through the 29th of February a trunk show from Under the Sea.
Under the Sea Fabrics.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay.
And then in addition to that, through the 29th, and this started on the 15th, okay? So through the 29th, this is online only. You can buy Weeks Dye Works fabric at 30% off.
Nice.
It's online purchase. If you're near the store, you can pick it up in the store, but you have to do an online purchase. All right. 30% off. You know, that's pricing where you say, hey, I'm going to buy some just to have it. You know what I mean? Just to have it. Yeah. 30% off Weeks Dye Work fabric. And, that's through the 29th. Got to order online, firepoppies.com. So it's FirePoppies, firepoppies.com. So check that out. That's a pretty good deal.
Yes, it
30,
is.
30% off. Holy smokes.
Yep.
I say Fiber Talk listeners, clean her out.
Yes.
I want the phone call that says, I got nothing left. Tell them to stop buying. Well, she'll tell me I don't have anything left, but she won't tell me to stop buying. But. Oh. Yeah, I want that phone call. They bought everything. All right. That's what we're after.
Go for it.
Yes. I think so. So firepoppies.com, Susan Winter, listen to the show this past Sunday and check it out. And thanks to Susan for sponsoring. We really appreciate it. Yeah. Makes this thing keep going. It does. Absolutely. It does.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got stuff to talk about. Now, we got stuff to talk about. And then toward the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about Arlene's new designs, the designs that will be in the Hoffman Distributing Room at the Nashville Market.
Yes.
And that you're introducing, you're not exhibiting official exhibitor, but Hoffman is going to show your designs.
Mm-hmm.
And these are designs you're releasing for Nashville Market activities.
Correct.
And then we're just going to talk a little bit because accompanying this podcast on the YouTube channel, the Fiber Talk YouTube channel, and I assume it'll be on Works by ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't talk about that, but I assume that.
Yep.
And also on WeTalkFiber.com, we're going to do a video, and we're going to look at all four of those and talk about what went into them and how they came to be and so on and so forth. So there'll be a video to go with this podcast so you can see Arlene's new designs, four new designs, and that's going to be fun. So that's coming up.
Yes, absolutely.
It is. All right. I got to know, you've been showing pictures of your Curdy Biggs red and gold thing.
Uh-huh.
It's kicking butt.
Thank you.
It's kicking butt. It really is coming together. Is it going the way you thought, or are you adjusting on the fly?
It's a little bit of both because I knew that once I started going on those large octagons, I would evolve as I went how I was going to use the threads. And I would create patterns, for lack of better words, of, you know, what would go where. And for example, in the first octagon, I ended up using a very shiny metallic, and I should have, fireworks, the Rainbow Gallery fireworks.
Oh, uh-huh. Yes.
In like four, I wouldn't say corners because it's an octagon, but in four parts. And I realized this is a great focal point. I need to do something like this in each of the other octagons. And so I've purposely placed fireworks in that same way, in different stitches, different formats, but that thread in the other octagons that I've completed. I'm almost done, or by the time you hear this, I'll be done with the third octagon and working on the fourth one. And so by evolving as I go, I've come up with like these little challenges for myself of how can I consistently use this thread, or I've also worked in the Rainbow Gallery Very Velvet, which has a nice unfortunately, every picture that I've posted, I've been taking pictures at night when I'm done stitching, and I need to consciously try to remember to take a picture during daytime hours where I could just, get a better picture.
Yeah.
But I love the contrast of a thread like Very Velvet with, some of the shiny stuff that I've got going on there. And so that's another one that's, helping to balance the whole, the vision of the whole thing. And then there will be some further decisions to be made once I get the beads going in it. I've been doing most of the stitches that she, Curdy Biggs, has in the pattern. I let go of a few of them just to give a little bit more breathing space, for lack of better words,
That's what you're doing. See, that's the thing. No, I don't think it's a lack of better words. Yeah. I like Curdy's designs, but they are dense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I liked about the last one you did that was the term I've used in describing to people. You've taken some things out to let it breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you're doing that again with this one. I think that's a real positive thing. And I think that's an apt description for what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun to just, I know when I was at the store originally collecting threads, I had quite a pile of red and some gold, but a lot of different red threads of different types of, some shiny, some not. And I limited down a little bit. I decided I didn't need 10 or 12 different kinds of threads. I think I'm using, maybe it's 6 different kinds. I should have that number more clear in my head of red threads. And it's, it's a limiting factor, but in a good way. It's not a problem at all. The only one challenge that I've run into, and it's just a good challenge. The thread that I used in the border, the red thread that I used in the border, because it has both red and gold, is the petite silk lamé braid. I didn't even know there was petite silk lamé braid until I saw it there at the store. And the regular silk lamé braid was too thick for the Smyrna crosses that make up that border.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that I picked up the petite silk lamé braid, even though, I wasn't sure what would be used when I was picking up threads. And that worked perfectly for the border. Although I used literally almost the entire card. Rainbow Gallery comes on cards. And I thought, this is going to be a thread I'm probably going to want to use in other parts of the design. The next time I was at the store, which was just a couple weeks later, I was all ready to get another card of it, and there wasn't any more of that particular color.
Mm.
And it, of course I could order it. I could get it somewhere else, but I just decided, let me just leave that thread to be the thread that was in the border. And I'm just going to figure out ways to get around not having it in other places that I might want it, so that alone makes it a slightly different design than had I been able to pick up another card of it in the moment that I wanted it, because some of the choices I've made in various places might have been a little bit different. But to me, that's the fun of doing something like this, when you're really changing up the threads that are put out there in a pattern, in a design. And I've heard cross stitchers talk about this. I've heard needle pointers talk about this. When you are taking something and truly making it your own, and, as long as you're comfortable doing that, there really can be quite the fun of it, of trying to decide, how do I want to make this look? And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, and I think in terms of other people wanting to try this, I think you've set a good example here in that you said red and gold.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone wants to try it, if you just say, all right, two colors, I'm going to make it work with two colors, use different threads, different shades, and so on and so forth, but two colors, then you eliminate a whole lot of that. Does yellow go with blue, with orange, yeah, with green?
Mm-hmm.
And you can then approach it with a better defined and a simplified color palette that then allows you to start to deal with how does it make the stitches look.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, no, I think that's a good example for people who want to venture out and say, wait, I'm going to take this thing and do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that very velvet, I run into it quite a bit with needlepoint, but I don't think it gets the credit it should get because it really has a very different look and feel and a real positive, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a richness to it, and it, when I was working on that project with my group, needlework group at the store, that second time when I discovered I couldn't buy the second card, a number of people were commenting on, you know, what is that thread? That looks really cool. That, you know, that it's just not, you're right, it just doesn't get enough credit. It's not seen enough, and yet it has such a neat quality to it.
Yeah.
That it does have, I'm just going to use that word, a richness to it that really adds something to a piece.
Right. And yeah, and it comes in different widths. There's at least two or three different widths. So you're not, because sometimes you'll see the thick one, you go, okay, I can only use that in certain places.
Sure.
But there are different widths, and then there are plenty of colors. It's
Yeah,
Rainbow Galleries, that's a fun place to play. Mm-hmm. Because people who've used a flare, for instance, which is, annoying. But you know, I say that, and it can be really frustrating, but every time I've used it and got it stitched in, it really is cool,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that whole Rainbow Gallery collection of different threads of all kinds that, you know, a lot of them, you know, are basically plastic, but,
yeah,
you know, just all kinds that really add some terrific accents.
Yes.
Used judiciously.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what they have to offer. It really is.
Yes. If you are ever in a store that has a good selection of Rainbow Gallery, it's well worth, you know, perusing. And there are a fair number of those threads that could work with cross stitch.
Yes.
Some of them they can't, but plenty of them that come in narrower widths that are well worth exploring. You know, I know that, you know, for example, you and Vaughn have been talking about Floche a lot recently, and I know that that's gotten a lot of people talking about, there's another thread besides DMC floss and besides the quote typical over dyed threads and those
right.
typical silks and stuff. Well, you know, start exploring some other threads that are out there, and you just don't know what you find sometimes. It's a fun thing.
Yeah. And that the Rainbow Gallery stuff, I wouldn't do it in a reproduction sampler, but
sure.
a lot of other cross stitch things where you might say, hey, I could do a satin stitch here.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a lot of fun rather than just a field of X's. I could do a satin stitch and then go look at the Rainbow Gallery collection and see what you might do that satin stitch in, because I'm willing to bet you'd find something really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look at like that very velvet, and I think of roofs, nice, you know, flat red, deep red mm-hmm. roof.
Yep.
Or, yeah, or any, whatever color it is, doesn't matter. But that would lend itself really well to a roof. You place it with some grass. There's all kinds of things you can do. And mm-hmm. yeah, and get away from that DMC or silk of the day or whatever it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and there's plenty of people that have been using the Petite Treasure Braid as their go-to metallic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other metallics that that Rainbow Gallery has that are, you know, worth exploring. And again, not all are going to work on a linen or something like that, but
right. They
do give some different effects out there. And, you know, it's fun to kind of see what you can do with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's just it. And if you don't like it, take it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. No, I don't think they get enough credit for all the different things, because they have some pretty unusual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And And it's, I would say, probably hard for stores to carry everything they offer.
Yes.
Holy
oh, yeah.
smokes. Yeah. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm having fun watching the Curdy Biggs thing come along. Now, have you been, this unfair question, have you been able to, have you been putting on your blog a progression pictures, or haven't you gotten to that?
No, I have. That's a good point. I have not. I've just, the only place I've posted it, Instagram pictures and a few Facebook groups, but I've not put it on my blog, although it's on the list to do a blog post about it. It just hasn't gotten there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I do have.
I know that feeling.
Yes. I do have the various pictures of the different stages of where it is. So there might be a bunch of pictures put up at one time. But again, you know, it's sort of the fun of making the decisions as I go or evolving them. I mean, now in starting that fourth octagon, there's a lot of, while I, you know, without having exactly knowing this stitch is going to be in this thread and this stitch is going to be that thread, I already have worked out, well, there's got to be some fireworks in there. There's got to be some very velvet. There's got to be a little bit of gold that looks, you know, that's in these places and, you know, to balance with the red. It's, you know, it's sort of fun to be playing like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yay. Well, I'm enjoying watching it come together. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Good it's a stuff. Lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. All right. Vaughn and I talked about, I got a listener who, wasn't happy with the way I was stitching with my hand touching the thread.
Uh-oh.
We got talking in about, but it was okay. It got us, Vaughn and I, talking about how clean and to what lengths you go to keep your thread and your projects clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I described everything I do, and I think some people were going, oh, please spare me. Because I probably get ridiculous. And then Vaughn described herself as the pig pen of needlework, but, which I'm sure was an exaggeration.
Yes.
But, so, you know, now I'm really thinking, you know, after the reactions, I'm really thinking about, you know, do I go overboard? I'm not going to change because it's what makes me comfortable with my needlework and I don't think about it. You know, it's not like, you know, like I want it in a 3-hour session, I'll wash my hands probably certainly two, if not three times. You know, everything is covered up when I'm done, so no light or dust gets to it, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to ask you, do you go to any lengths when you're working on stuff or when you're storing stuff, or do you not worry about it so much?
So I was thinking about this. It was about, I'm trying to come up with a date, probably about 15 years ago, that I was working on a large counted canvas work piece that was white. There was gold. There was definitely like Krynek metallic. I remember, it was a given as a gift. So I don't have it in my possession, but it was a lot of white thread. And it was the first time that I consciously thought, I should really wash my hands every time before I sit down to work on it, because it was all white.
Yeah.
And that's what's like, that was the start, even though I'd been stitching for some years before that. But that was clearly the point where I began to be more conscious of keeping my hands clean, like making sure I was sitting down with clean hands.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think I would ever have called anything I'd done before that dirty, or, you know, I've never gotten anything stained or anything like that. It was just, I definitely remember that. And so that has started me on the process that I will always wash my hands before I sit down to stitch. Like, that's a given. I will rarely get up in the middle of a stitching session to wash them in the middle. When you just said that you wash two or three times. No, if I'm sitting down, I'm sitting down. So that's the first thing. I do keep the pieces that I'm working on, when I'm done working, I do have like a cloth or something that I will put over them to cover them. Partially because, well, I guess I'm just trying to go through my mind. When did I start doing that? It used to be when I lived in a different place that my stitching area was so not in direct sunlight at all. But I think I started covering because of just dust. Oh, you know what? I bet I know when I started doing it. So it's connected with my bobbin lace world. When I started doing bobbin lace, I was taught, I mean, it was a taught thing that you should always cover your lace pillow, you know, with a cloth. Whenever you step away from it, you should always be consciously aware of like dust could be settling on your pillow or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that somehow traveled over to my stitching. The idea of, well, when I'm not when I'm stepping away to go to the bathroom, but when I'm leaving it for the night, I should cover it. And the idea of dust, just to start out, I don't know what else I could possibly be preventing it from, except for now where I stitch. There is a certain part of the day during a certain part of the year where a little bit of sunlight, depending on exactly how I've left my stand, might be hitting it. And so I certainly have it covered because I don't want the sunlight to affect it.
Right.
So I do think about that. I think about where the threads are that I'm using and keeping them out of sunlight. But I don't, you know, depending on what project I'm working on, they might be in a baggie, they might be in a project bag, they might be in any number of ways. Although my stand has these little pegs where you could hang like things from them, I don't have threads just hanging out in the open. I always just keep threads put away. That's just the way I've always done it. But I do think about where is that baggie of threads, making sure that stays out of the sunlight when I'm not working.
I have those pegs too, and there's no way I would leave threads hanging on those pegs. Not a chance. No, that's just too uncovered and opened. You know. No, that wouldn't happen. And it's too bad. I mean, I thought, well, even when I'm stitching, I should use those pegs because they're right there and they're very handy and very nice. But then I think, well, time I get all the threads put on the pegs and all lined up and then put them all away afterwards, forget it. I'm not doing all that. take them out of the bags. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I use one of those pegs I put my scissors on them. Yep. You know,
same here. Yep.
And I use another one of those pegs when I'm working on a canvas work piece, and I keep out what I use for a laying tool is one of those like thimble kind that have like a bent needle at the end.
Yeah. Trolley needle.
Yeah. It's not the trolley needle brand, but it's a trolley needle. Yes.
You have the one that's bent like Debbie Raleigh has. Oh, I'm jealous of you.
I'd have to see what she has to be sure.
She has a trolley needle, and the needle has been bent at an angle so that when you put your thumb at an angle, it's flat to the canvas.
That sounds right. Yes.
Oh, I mean, man.
Well, mine is literally like a thimble that, you know, like a silver thimble that the top has been cut off.
Uh-huh.
And a needle has been like, I don't know, soldered onto there on the inside, like a big needle, but it has a bent part to it that is then like when you put it at an angle is flat to the canvas. Yes.
Oh, I'm jealous. Cause that's what Debbie uses exclusively for a laying tool.
Okay. Yes.
And because those trolley needles, I can't stand those things.
Yes.
But if it's at an angle like that, that's a whole new ballgame. Oh man. Yay, you.
And you can't get those anywhere, as I'm just talking out loud?
No. No, you can't, that I know of. Debbie had a guy who was making them at one time, but I don't think he's making them anymore. No, you can't. Yeah. Huh. If somebody could spot weld or do whatever, they could probably sell a bunch of them. Because, see, that's handy. Once you get used to it, that's handy to have that right there at the end of your thumb. Whatever.
No, that's the only laying tool I have ever used. I mean, I have tried the concept of other laying tools, and that just seems like such a pain in the neck when you have one that you could literally wear. I mean, I wear it on my forefinger and that's just, you know, and I have to be consciously aware, you know, if I stop to take a drink of water or something that I have that on my finger, but it's,
yeah, you could poke yourself easily, yes.
Yeah, you so could poke yourself easily if you're not consciously aware of it. But it's what has always worked for me. And it's, you know, there are times where I'm petrified that I'm going to lose it. Because I guess I was aware that I haven't seen them for sale anywhere. I got it years and years and years ago at like a show of some kind, I think. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll guard that thing, because yeah, you ain't replacing it.
All right.
And it's that bend that makes the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You win.
Okay. All right. I win. I like it.
Yep. You absolutely win on that one. Yeah, that so the keeping things clean. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That you're not too far off from what I do. Because the reason I started covering my working pieces is I like to leave them on the stand and leave them out. But I would discover that it's not unusual for me to stitch for 2 or 3 days and then have, you know, 4 or 5 go by where I don't even go near it. Mm-hmm. Because I've got other things going on and I just can't get there. Mm-hmm. And I realized one day, you know, this thing is sitting out here open to the world. And we don't have kids at home anymore. We don't have any pets, but still dust and stuff. And mm-hmm. over the accumulation of, you know, if it takes a year to finish something or whatever, a bunch of stuff could accumulate on there. So what does it hurt to throw a piece of cloth over it?
And yep.
It's yep. worth it. Yeah.
And I mean that, like what I have currently on the, Curtie Biggs piece is just like a cloth napkin that I never have used as a napkin. It was a pretty thing and I bought it specifically to be used as a cover cloth. Uh-huh. Like that's what you can have available, or, you know, a piece of fabric or something like that. It doesn't need to be anything fancy, but, just something that keeps your work covered is all that you need.
Right. Yeah. For me, it's cotton handkerchiefs that Marga's dad had when he was one of those that always carried a handkerchief. I never could get into that. I'd prefer a Kleenex and throw it away. But so she kept all of those, and I have 2 of them downstairs. And every now and then I throw them in the wash just because, you know, they should be clean. But, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to tell you, old cotton thread.
Mm-hmm.
When I did the Sassy Jack's Aussie fundraising thing, when I stitched that.
Yep.
I just had some linen and I had all but 2 of the DMC colors. And I have a double-sided fishing tackle box, because long ago for my DMC, I bought a fishing tackle box and you can't get them anymore. So I have this tackle box that is double-sided and it's full of anchor thread.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to just throw the anchor thread away because I wanted the box. I didn't care about the anchor thread, but I wanted the box because I wanted to have room to put DMC floss.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't bring myself to throw away all that thread. I mean, it's a lot of, there's a lot of bobbins of thread.
Uh-huh.
And so I hung on to it. And I bet that thread is, it's got to be 20 plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
Easy, mm-hmm. easy 20 plus years old.
Okay.
And so I was 2 colors short for this Aussie design. And I thought, all right, I'm going to get a conversion chart and find out what anchor threads are the equivalent, and I'll see if I have them, because I have a bunch of them.
Yep.
And sure enough, I had both of them. And I thought, well, this will be an interesting experiment to see if this thread has any integrity at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just been sitting. It's not been in daylight. It's been in a controlled, you know, just down in the family room.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely fine. I didn't even think about it. There was no fraying. There was no fading. There was no weakness. It stitched like brand new thread. So I was pretty encouraged. And now I'm really glad I kept all that anchor thread.
Yeah.
Because it was great. Cause I've often wondered, as thread gets really old, what happens to it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, absolutely nothing. So,
well, I mean, I've done my own little, not consciously, but my own reality of experiment is that I have some DMC that's bobbinated. And the last time I bobbinated DMC was easily 20 years ago. And so the container of that's bobbinated, which I have a little checklist. I know which ones I have in the baggies and which ones are in that container.
Yeah.
And there are times that I still pull from that container. Now, if I'm starting a new project that I'm going to use a significant amount of a particular color, I admit I probably would start with a brand new skein. I'd get a new one. But if I'm just going to use it for a little bit and I just need to, you know, have, I don't know, however many stitches, I totally go to my container of bobbinated ones, and I have not had any problems with it. I think there's been a few times where I have been able to compare a color of the bobbinated ones, which again are easily 20 years old, with a current color. And most of the time the colors are fine. A couple of times I can see a slight difference, but then again, you can see a slight difference with, you know, one, you know, you buy one at Michael's and you buy one at Joann's, right, and they can be slightly different. Yeah. So I'm glad you kept that thread, because I agree. 20-year-old thread could still be used. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now it has real value to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not throwing that away.
Nope.
So yeah, it was just a thing. And it was also a piece where if the thread didn't work out, I could just change to another color.
Sure.
And I'd be fine. But, so it was, I thought, well, all right, I wonder just how this, and I thought, all right, it comes off the thing. It's been wrapped around these bobbins for years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're creases, but I never worry about that. I mean, I've never seen those matter. You get just stitch with them, and I've never had those creases ever matter much. And then they always tend to relax as you work anyway. So,
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, there we go. So both of us, same experience then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Never throw away your old thread. I mean, I shouldn't say never. Like if it's all tangled, if it's gotten dirty, if all those kind of reasons. But just because it's old, that is not a reason to throw it away.
No, definitely not. Keep it. And you never know. You never. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a perfect example. Mm-hmm. You know, I sat there. I thought, if I have to go buy two skeins of thread to use 2 feet from each skein to do this thing, I'm finding another color. And then it was, wait a minute, there's a whole box full of the anchor thread. I bet you I have the colors.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo, end of problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that whole thing got done out of stash, so it was great.
That's awesome.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So that was good. And another thing I was going to ask you, I have questions for you. See, you come to mind from time to time.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
And so then I have questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
With all your designing and stitching and all the different things, do you ever run into get to a juncture at some point where it's, you know, it becomes a chore? Whatever you're doing is a chore?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Because I do. I get to that point sometimes, too. So I just wondered if you had the same experience.
So I'm trying to think if I would ever like use the phrase, it's a chore. I get, so in the most recent example, and then maybe I'll think some more as I'm talking this out loud, that white work sampler piece that you see work on from time to time. That
the one that Vanna abandoned you on. Yeah, that one.
The one that Vanna abandoned me on. Yep. Yes.
Ditched you like a bad habit, boy.
Yeah. So I know that I've posted about the alphabet that's made up of eyelets.
Yes.
And how that is a bear to get through. That each time I've picked it up, I've tried to do a couple letters, but I've also been working on other parts of it just as that balance. So sure, I mean, I don't know if I'd use these words, but yes, I could say those eyelet letters are a bit of a chore to get through. Is there a time, I'm just thinking out loud, are there times when I find something that I'm stitching to be a chore? I don't, you know, maybe a couple times when I've been working on models for something and I just want this thing done because I'm ready to move on to the next thing, but I'm not in a place where I can put it aside because I literally need to get it done because I need it done because I want to finish model. And so my way of dealing with that is that I usually don't allow myself to work on the next thing. I know some people will say in a rotation kind of fashion, you'll do better if you start something else for a couple of days and then you'll come back to it feeling refreshed, for lack of better words. At least in my most recent stitching time period, I tend to kind of push through those feelings and just say, I want to get this done. I'll go back a little bit. When I was working on the large silk gauze piece, the one that you found me when I was posting on Needlepoint Nation about, I know when I started that, I purposely kind of gave myself permission that this was so large and it was, you know, on such small count, it was a 40 count piece that, if I needed to take a break from it, it was going to be okay. Because usually I would start a project and work, you know, from beginning to end. But that one I had said, if I need to stop and work on something else, it's going to be okay. And I did. I think I was at about the halfway point, or maybe it was literally, you know, I'd gotten halfway done. And I said, okay, good. This is the point where I am a little tired of doing, you know, working with I had double lights and magnifiers and, you know, just everything that it took to just be doing that in the way that I wanted to do it. And I was a little tired of it. And so that was a time where I did say, I need to put this aside and I was a month or so and worked on something else. And then I was really, you know, I waited till I felt like I want to get back to that piece.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess for the people who are out there that have so many projects to choose from and who, you know, have that little thrill of excitement whenever they're working on something different, or that's what keeps them going, is that thrill of excitement of working on something different. And whether they have a former rotation of like every 3 days they work on something different or whatever, I've never really had that kind of feeling. That's just me. But I get why some people really get into that. It's just not something that has worked for me.
See, that's, for me, it gets to be a chore. It's those islet things like that, those kinds of situations where you really have to discipline yourself or play mind tricks or do something to get through that. All right, I'll do 5 a day for the next week or something.
Yep.
And yeah, that to me, that starts to get to be a chore. Mm-hmm. But, oh, I remember that gauze thing. So many people were just riveted to the progress you made on that. And it's such a beautiful piece. But I remember thinking many times along the way, boy, I hope she's enjoying this, because by now I'd have just put it on a shelf. Because that is a lot of tedious work. I mean, that was slow progress. Mm-hmm. And boy, when you'd put up a new one, you'd made progress. And I thought, holy smokes, she's in this for the long haul.
Yeah. And again, I think that's the one time that I started a fairly large project that I wasn't sure if I was really going to completely see it through, because it did feel quite, like, again, am I really, I'm giving myself permission to stop if I'm not enjoying it.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's true with all my stitching. I would give myself, you know, just like if I'm reading a book and I don't enjoy it, I give myself permission to stop, you know?
Yep.
I know some people just are like, no, I have to keep going, kind of thing. With needlework, it's not, you know, this is supposed to be what you enjoy. It's supposed to be your pleasure. It's not supposed to be work. Right. So that piece was a time where I did wonder, am I going to enjoy it for such a large piece? But yeah, I did. You know, but that break in the middle was important. I think that was needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you hung in there, and then you came out with, you know, one of the more impressive pieces I've ever seen.
No,
yeah, I mean, it's just spectacular. But you had to hang in there on that. That's interesting about books. See, I'm the same way with books. I have had so many books through the years that I, halfway through, it's like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really, frankly, don't care what happens to these people. I don't care how this comes out. Yeah. I'm done. And yeah, I just walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I didn't do that was, I don't know if you've ever read any Tom Clancy books. And Hunt for Red October was the one that put him on the map. But brilliant writer, absolutely brilliant writer. But he gets so bogged down, so caught up in all the technology for a submarine or a missile or a whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he really can shoot himself in the foot, because he just gets so bogged down in it. And I had two or three of his books where I just, oh, stop this. And so I put it away, but I kept the books. And then one summer I said to myself, all right, here's the summer challenge. I'm going to read every Tom Clancy book all the way caught up in a summer. I'm going to stick it out, you know? And I did. And I fought my way through a couple of those that I had given up on. And then I realized the importance of why he went into all that detail, because then he made all that pay off later in the stories.
Oh.
And so you really, once you got through one of those books, you realized, oh, if I hadn't known all that, it would, you know, I'd have missed out on half the story. Mm. And I fought the way through it. And that's the only time with a book. And I did. I read them all that summer. Boy, I just plowed through them. There was always a Clancy book in my hands. Got through them all. And this was back when he was alive and actively writing. But that was the only time. But needlework, yeah, I have several projects where I may never go back to them.
Mm.
You know. But then, you know, I think sometimes you trip over one. Like you're going through some stuff, you trip over. Wait a minute, I forgot I had this. Why didn't I finish this?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a new perspective and you dig into it. And,
mm-hmm.
Yep, that gauze one, boy, I tell you, that was impressive. You hung in there, I'll tell you. You did.
I will say the designer, Natalia Frank, I'm almost positive I've got the name correct. She, and I would tag her in the posts and she would see them. At some point, she did message me and say that she was coming out with a companion piece to that design.
Uh-huh.
And it's beautiful. But I fully admitted I wasn't going to do another
no
one.
No way.
One was enough. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. I don't blame you. That was a journey. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of designs, okay, you got four designs.
Yes.
Four of them. I like them all, but I'll tell you there are two that, yeah. Yeah. So, all right, so we're going to do a video after, so people need to go watch the video, then you can see it. But, so it's landscape, how to live, floral lace, and Italian tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the landscape one, we'll get in more detail in the video, but that is, it's like, it's black work, right?
No, those are all, that's all cross stitch.
Really?
Yes.
No way.
Yeah, totally cross stitch.
Oh, so, it is. Look at that. I blew it up. I just blew it up.
Yep.
That looks like black work.
Well, again, I'll be talking more about this in the video, but it's something that I was inspired to do something like that after seeing an exhibit at an art gallery. And the idea, and when I did a floss tube video beginning, middle of January, and I was giving, and I'm calling sneak peeks. What was I saying? I was showing the fabric and the thread that I was using for my four designs, and I was using a word for each. And the word I used for that was repetition, because I took one motif and I repeated it and then used that to help bring the design together with the threads. And again, this is something you need to see. So this is a reason you're going to want to see it on the video.
Right.
I love stitching that. Even though it's stitching the same motif over and over, but there were different places where I was changing the thread colors. It is a style that I want to do other pieces with, just for the fun challenge of it. When I was stitching on it, some members of my needlework group saw it and were giving me some very interesting feedback. They just thought they'd never seen anything like that before. And they just thought it was really cool and really, you know, a totally different way to look at cross stitch. And I was thrilled because, you know, that's something that I was glad that I was putting out there in the world of cross stitch to do something that was just a little different.
Okay. All right. Now when we do, all right, now I've got questions.
Okay.
See, I just looked at that and I didn't look at it closely.
Okay.
And I thought that's an interesting application of black work. I literally just looked at it, you know, nothing personal. The scene
yep.
there just didn't do anything for me. And I thought, but that's an interesting use of black work. Go Arlene.
Okay.
Holy smokes. This is now it's a whole different thing for me.
Okay.
Wow. Right. Okay. All right. So good for that. All right. Now okay. we got questions. Oh man.
All right.
Buckle up.
Okay.
And then how to live.
Yep.
Which is all words. And that's,
yep.
I like that one.
Yep. That the there was as I look for inspiration everywhere, anywhere I can. I was in a magazine. I was reading somewhere between an essay and a poem. I don't know. I wouldn't call it a poem. An essay. I encountered, and I, again, I'll talk more in the video about it, but there was something that just struck me about the words. And the essay was titled Principles of Adult Behavior, which seemed a little too serious of that's what I should call my pattern. But, and it was written by a 30-year-old. So it's not like it was written by an old curmudgeon, it was written by a 30-year-old in 1977.
With all of those life experiences of 30 years.
Exactly. And again, there were some things that I didn't include. They just didn't seem relevant. They didn't flow in the same way. But there really are sort of words of wisdom, words to live by. And I took the ones that had the most meaning to me, and I just wanted to preserve them in some way and put them out there. There's little motifs that are in between each of the statements. And those motifs come from an older pattern book where I always look for inspiration. But it's the focus on the words. And I know that there are some stitchers that love to do words. There are some that don't. But some that, that really take inspiration from what they can stitch. And this is potentially certainly one of those places.
Yep. Well, yeah, I'm not a word stitcher, so nice design, but yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yep. And then floral lace and Italian tiles. Those are the two. And we're saving those for the end of the video because I want to talk about those because those are the two for me.
Okay.
Those are the two.
Well, and the just little bits to say about those, I think if you were to look at my whole selection of patterns that I have done, it's quite a eclectic group. I have, a few things that show up at various times, but there's quite a variety in what I do. Even looking at these four, these are four very different types of cross stitch.
Yes.
But there are two themes that show up every so often. One of them is using lace as inspiration. And so it seemed appropriate to me to make sure that one of my Nashville designs involved lace. And so that's where the floral lace came in. And another theme that shows up very often is going to inspiration from old pattern books. And by old, I'm talking centuries old. And the Italian tiles design came from one of those books from the 1600s or so. And just finding something that looked really cool and then working with it to make it have a modern twist to it.
Yeah.
And so that it seemed, again, because that idea of pulling from history into a modern day cross stitch design is something that I do with a lot of my patterns. I wanted to make sure to have one of those kind for my Nashville pieces. So,
yep. Okay. All right. That's the tease, folks. Got to watch the video now.
Yep.
Ooh, now I have questions. Yes. All right. We're going to wrap this up then. So Friday Night Live, Vaughn and I, Friday Night Live, 8 o'clock Eastern. Don't miss that. A lot of fun. Bring beer. It's okay. So do that. And then the Nashville show, the first full weekend in March, Vaughn and I and Arlene will all be at Nashville. And right now we're planning four live shows. So if you want to see what's at the show, we're planning four live shows, and they're pretty much going to consist of showing everything we can collect from the designers to show.
Uh-huh.
And so that's going to be fun. And then some podcasts and some other things. So the best thing to do is to go to wetalkfiber.com, and at the end on every page for a podcast, at the end is a little form that's just your name and your email address. And you fill that out. That's all you have to do. And that puts you on the list. So, and I do a mailing. Every time I post something on wetalkfiber.com, then the mailing list gets notification of that. You don't get spam. You don't get ads. You don't get promos. You don't get anything. You just get notification that we posted something. So that's one way to keep up. And then the other way, and I highly recommend this too, is to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Because these live videos will go there immediately. They'll be broadcast through the YouTube channel live, and then the recording will be on the YouTube channel. So go subscribe there, and that way then you get noticed, you get notified when we go live. And then I try, like Friday night live shows, I send out a notification Thursday or Friday that we're doing a Friday night live show. And so you would get that. And I don't do that through the We Talk Fiber thing. I just do it through through YouTube. And then we also promote these things on the Fiber Talk Instagram page. Mm-hmm. So that's another place. But I guess the message is, especially for the Nashville weekend, if you want to see these things and be up to date, is to subscribe somewhere so you get notified, and then you'll know. And by then we'll have some kind of a rough schedule for when we're going to do these shows, and other things that we're doing. So do that. Yeah, we're calling it, because now go watch the video once you're done listening to this. And always try to get in a plug. Worksbyabc.com. That's Arlene's page, and her Etsy shop off of that, and her YouTube channel off of that too. So Worksbyabc. All right. Thanks for listening, and go watch the video.
Thanks. Take care.